I'm Mike Fader, and this is Occupied Territory. This is a new show on PRN. Gary mentioned just before that it's a special. I don't know how long this show will go on. It depends how long the Occupy movement goes on. And that's the strangeness of it and the beauty of it. This show is formed out of the desire on my part to feed as much fuel to this movement as possible, because I see it as a kind of a last hope for this country to, not to just reclaim, I don't know if it's ever been totally given to us or whether we ever had one, but to actually establish a true representative democracy, because we're sliding into a corporate police state here in this country, and no one could deny it anymore. And, you know, we can go over all the details, but that's a whole show by itself. But if this movement, I think, if this movement, the Occupy movement, doesn't keep going, doesn't get bigger, and doesn't ultimately form into a massive, focused political force, we've all had it. We can all just get ready for the chips in the brains and knocks on the door in the middle of the night, and that's it. So this is a show which is not just a one-time thing. It's going to follow the Occupy movement. As the Occupy movement grows, this show will grow with it. As it changes, this show will change with it. So this is kind of reflective. This is a receptive show commenting on the Occupy movement. And the name, Occupied Territory, it immediately sounds bad, right? You know, what's the first thing a lot of people think of? Well, countries that are occupying other places, that's bad. People who have invaded or sat on other people's land, and it happens all over the world all the time. And we know prominent examples of it. The first instance I can think of occupied territory that concerns us here and has to do with what's going on right now, because it all starts in a big incubator, which is called America. The first occupied territory I'm aware of in American history is when the British, although they considered it part of their empire, occupied the United States of America. They had their mercenaries, they had their soldiers, they had their bureaucrats, and they were occupying basically American land. People came over here for a new life. They were brave. They had a lot of courage, to put it mildly. They worked hard, and they built a country for themselves. And, of course, the British decided that, of course, it was theirs. They owned it. It was the king's land. So they occupied the place with armed soldiers. And the first Occupy reaction, which is like an Occupy movement today, or like, you know, Occupy Wall Street, was Boston Common in 1770, when a bunch of Americans got finally so angry that they occupied Boston Common. It turned into a mob. There were shootings. People died. This is what happened. So that's why it's called Occupied Territory. And a further explanation about occupied territory. A lot of people who are criticizing the occupiers, they're sitting illegally, people say, on public space, on federal, state, and city land. They're there illegally. They're marching in the streets without permits. Everything they do is illegal. They're a bunch of criminals. Well, you know what? There are a lot of people breaking a lot of laws. And these aren't felonies. They're not getting permits for a parade. They're not getting permits to sleep out or camp out. Big deal. This is nothing. The real occupiers of this country are the people on Wall Street and their hired politicians who have occupied the Supreme Court, they have occupied the Congress, and they've occupied the White House. And they occupy all of our lives all the time. They own everything. They have occupied America. We need to take it back. That's why I'm very, very hopeful and encouraged by this movement. But remember who the real occupiers are. And forget about people marching without permits and people sitting in places where they don't have a right to, quote unquote. That's what people in the union movement did in the early 1900s, to form unions in the 30s. That's what people did in the civil rights movement. If no minor laws were broken, there would never be any change in society at all. Not in this society, not in any society. So this is something to remember, who the real occupiers are, who the real criminals are. And another thing about occupiers, people are saying they have no specific goals. They're asking for everything. No, they're not. By now, if you think that they have no specific goals, or like reporters in the New York Times or other major media saying, oh, it's fuzzy, they have no particular goals, this is either willful denial or this is just calculated ignorance on their part. The goal is clear. a very tiny group of very, very wealthy people have taken over our country. They own the country. We need to get it back from them. We don't need to buy it back from them. We don't need to say, please, can I have it back? It's our country. We need to take it back from them. So it's very clear what the goal is. And if other people are bringing everything into it, and we're going to do that in this show too, if we were talking about the economy, financial transaction taxes, breaking up the banks, criminal sentences for people on Wall Street, and we haven't seen any of those yet, getting rid of all the corrupt politicians, fixing the healthcare system, all of this is part of the same thing, because it all goes down to this. A bunch of a small, tiny group, and they call it the 1%, the 99% and the 1%, a small group of people has used wealth and power to corrupt and to own and to chart the course of America, and we need to change that. So this is the goal. The goal is obvious. I also wanted to say that this is a revolution. We fought a revolution to get this country, and it was a violent revolution. And we hope this one isn't too violent. And it all depends how much people in the Occupy movement want to work within the system. Clearly, the two-party system is broken. Our government is broken. It doesn't work for us anymore. Voting is a sad joke. It's just merely a joke. There's maybe a handful, there's five candidates out of thousands that are running that you could vote for. Maybe it's different on the state level, I don't know. But federal level, everybody's bought and sold, bought and paid for. So this 99%, it's a catchy phrase, right? But of course, the 1% to 99%, nothing is that simple. Absolutely nothing is that simple. A lot of people in the 99% are getting over on everybody else. There are doctors, not necessarily part of the 1%, the super rich, who are charging outrageous fees to people because they can get away with it, because the health insurance companies will pay for it. There are people committing Medicaid fraud all the time. I know somebody who works for a charity, a huge charity in New York City here, where they help the people who are the most helpless people, people who have all kinds of massive disabilities, children, old people, people who can't see, people who are sick. These people are they come to this one place. It's been here for like 100 years in this country. The chairman, the CEO of this charity makes over $1 million a year. And he just recently found it necessary to lay off dozens of $40,000 a year counselors, social workers, teachers, and nursing aides to people who will probably sink into insanity and death because of this. This is what's going on. Everybody's trying to get over on everybody else, If we have all our celebrities, all our politicians, all our business people, all the people that are quote-unquote leaders in society, if they are getting rich off all of us, if they are shameful and vulgar and obscenely rich and getting away with everything, what are the rest of us to do if we are just trying to get by? Well, you do what you need to do, right? You do what you need to do. Sometimes it seems like if you do the right thing, you're just a well-meaning passive sap. We have to change the whole way this thing works. We're going to have a couple of guests on coming on just in a minute, but I wanted to finish explaining what this show will be and what it won't be. I am not the kind of person who could look at somebody I love and ignore their faults. I am fascinated by and I am extremely devoted to this Occupy movement. It's the first time I've seen since the 60s, and I've been alive almost 70 years. It's the first time I've seen since the 60s where an entire generation of people, and across the board, left, right, middle, has awakened politically and economically. It took a lot of pressure and it took a lot of outrageous behavior on the part of the bad guys to do this, but people are finally awake. They've been in a coma for 30, 40 years. They are awake now. And we can just see what happened in the voting yesterday. All over the country, people in unions, people, forget left and right, people teach it, regular people started taking back their states and their governors' houses and their legislatures. And they, right down the line, they knocked off all these bigoted, stupid laws, anti-union laws, anti-female laws, everything yesterday. It was a wonderful thing to see. And one other comment, I suppose, is, well, there's a couple of things, but, the time to go into that. As I say, this show itself will take shape as it goes along. I've been on the radio 30 years, and I'm used to just talking without any kind of linear plan. So this show is, a new experiment for me, too. What we'll do here is, because it's planned and it's structured, so I'll have to fit myself into that. And it's the same thing as this Occupy group. Yes, they have goals. Right now, a lot of people insist that it's formless, that they don't have leaders, they don't want leaders. Well, it's as ancient as recorded history and as human philosophy and religion, whatever. You cannot long have any kind of movement or change without ultimately having some structure or leaders, whether you like them or not. And leaders are emerging, whether people like it or not. And they will have to, and the goals will have to be somewhat more focused. The other question is, does the Occupy movement, which is, if you look at Washington and New York especially, they've developed their an alternative government, for which I applaud them. They have their own super committee meetings. They have their own court meetings. They have their own budget meetings and lectures. And they have their own voting. But ultimately, just like this show is somewhat formless now and will take shape as it goes along week after week, we'll be here every Wednesday at 1 p.m., as the movement takes shape, this show is taking shape, too, along with it. So it's a very parallel operation. And then there's the Tea Party to consider, also religion. A lot of people on the left, Gary has mentioned this, reject religion and Christianity. Believe me, the original Christians were as much like the Occupy movement as you could possibly imagine. They met in completely egalitarian small groups. They had turned out in spaces where they didn't belong necessarily. They were persecuted, derided, laughed at. They were considered to be useless, crazy people. But in the end, they made their point. And in the end, they found that they had to have leaders. Inevitably, though, look what the leaders did. So we'll see what happens. If the movement doesn't turn into something massive, focused, and political, well, then it'll just be a cry of rage, and it'll dissipate. Now, there's plenty to talk about. But what the show's form, basically, is week after week, is that we'll have guests, people who are leading a lot of these activities, and people who are expert in economics, in politics, in other fields that the Occupy movement is concerned with, and we will interview them. Then we will certainly every week take calls from people who are at Occupy movements. Today, I hope, if everything works out, we'll hear from some people from Albany, Occupy Albany and Occupy Denver. And then what we'll do is take your calls, and we will I particularly want your participation in this. This is not just me doing a monologue. I need you to help me out with this, just like we all need to help this movement. And clearly, ways to contact me. There's the on-air number here. And today, I don't know how much we can take calls because I've sort of stacked a deck here. I have a million people booked. And, well, if they all call in, then not too much room for calls. But maybe we'll do that. The call-in number is 888-874-4888. And you can contact me. And I need information. Anybody out there who's in an Occupy movement, knows what's going on, has a story, wants me refer me to somebody, contact me at FaderFiles, FederFiles.com. FaderFiles is a contact way there. And also, you can, if you have comments or questions, you can tweet us at PRN_radio. PRN_radio. And we will take your tweets. I have been dragged kicking and screaming in my old age into the modern world. And it doesn't feel as bad as I thought it would. And what we're going to try to do now is get in touch and see if we have our first guest. We're looking for people who are leading the cause in some ways and who are going to put themselves on the line and going to extremes. And we have with us, as soon as we contact them, or we try to have with us, people from a place called National Nurses United, which is an interesting organization we'll find out more about. And they have been helping out in Oakland. They helped out during the police attacks out in Oakland. They have specifically actually focused in on the financial transaction tax, which is a big thing. Do we have...
Karen's on hold.
Oh, Karen? Karen's on hold. Okay. So we're going to go to National Nurses United and talk to at least one person. Perhaps we'll have two people. But right now on the line we have Karen Higgins, and she's a registered nurse and president of the Massachusetts Nursing Association. And she's was in D.C. for the November 3rd Financial Transaction Tax Action at the Treasury Department. You there, Karen?
I'm here. Hey.
Thanks for joining us.
That's great. I'm actually one of the presidents of National Nurses United, and I was a past president of Massachusetts Nurses Association.
Okay.
And I'm still a staff nurse that works in an in-town Boston hospital.
Mm-hmm. And the National Nurses United, maybe you could tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we are an organization that's now a couple of years old. We are an association that is national. We are over 170,000 frontline staff nurses from across this country that have joined together to take on issues that we have facing nurses and especially facing our patients every day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, before we go any further, so how do people find out about it, get in touch?
The National Nurses United is .org. If you look it up as nationalnursesunited.org, you should be able to not only link to us, but also, obviously our concern is, Main Street contract with getting a financial tax back and dealing with some of the issues that we see that everybody else has concerns about as well.
I know some of the nurses out in California were in Oakland when all that trouble was going on, right?
I believe they were, and I was hoping that one of the nurses that was supposed to join us today is from California, Martha, so I'm hoping that she will join in. But she has, been more involved out there. I had been more involved in the East Coast section of it, which is occupying New York, D.C., that area.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's a lot of action by National Nurses United on something called a financial transaction tax, and maybe you can explain to us what that is.
Well, I mean, as the history goes, we started talking about this back in the spring, and we actually did already had gone to Wall Street and did rallies in both places, and we actually went to some of the legislators to their hometowns and actually not only just with nurses but with a lot of community leaders and others that have concern about this did rallies there as well. And the reason we're doing it is because we've been very, very concerned about the fallout that is happening because of the economy. And I think when we heard that the solution to the problem was cutting Social Security and going after programs like Medicare, Medicaid, it became even a bigger issue with us because we're watching patients suffering, that they're not getting procedures and tests done that they need because they can't afford it. Even when they have insurance, they can't pay the deductibles. We're seeing children getting sicker and getting adult illnesses now, which is like hypertension and diabetes at young ages. And it's related to the fact that, yes, it's nice to eat good, healthy, nutritional food, but when you can barely keep a roof over your head, you feed your children whatever you can, and the cheapest, unfortunately, food is not healthy food. Mm. So based on all these, we really felt strongly that we needed to get involved. And as we looked at it, one of the things, we applaud those that are doing occupying, Wall Street across this country, and it's huge. And but we felt strongly that one of the places that we could go to say that we need a change, but we can actually do something concrete, was looking at the financial tax on Wall Street, the transaction tax. And we had it up until the 60s, and we needed to bring it back.
And precisely, that's just every there are, a couple of million trades per day, stocks, bonds, and what we're asking for here, and I'm going to say we because we're all in it together, except apparently for a couple of people, what we're asking for is something like a penny a trade or some minuscule amount of money per trade, which would add up to tens and tens of billions of dollars a year, maybe more, right?
Right. I mean, we actually, when we were looking at it, we went to 0.5 as being 0.5%. You've heard different numbers of even less money, but 0.5 would bring somewhere around $350 billion back into our economy every single year. Mm. But we also wanted to be sure that if you do that, that we actually put this money towards programs to help people get back up on their feet, to start reinvesting in jobs, to reinvest in health care, to reinvest in the education of our children that doesn't cost them the rest of their lives to pay off, to look at these things and use the money specifically for those areas and not just to put the money back into fixing the deficit.
So what you'd agitate? I think we have Martha Kuhl on the line, do we?
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Yes, we do.
Oh, hi, Martha. How you doing?
Hey, Martha.
Hey.
Let me introduce Martha to you all. She's a registered nurse. You're out in Oakland, right?
Yes.
And she's an officer of the California Nurses Association. part of National Nurses United, obviously. And Martha was at the G20 summit in France for an international financial tax, transaction tax demonstration in action. And in Europe, they have... So I'm back to what you were saying, Karen. Obviously, if this money is raised, if they ever pass a tax like that, and, you know, if we manage to get the hirelings in Congress to do the right thing, what we're all looking for is this money to be dedicated to going to certain specific places, not part of a general fund to invade countries and everything else, right?
No, we want it to go back to doing fixing the problems. And like I said, we know what the problems are, and it's people getting jobs, to reinvest in jobs in this country, to reinvest in educating our children, as I said, to get home, people back into their homes. You know, these are the things that we want the money put back into, not into things that, again, won't fix what is going on in this country. We need to concretely reinvest in this country and get people back to work and back in their homes and, you know, give our kids an education that they don't have to spend the rest of their lives trying to pay off.
So, Martha, you were in Europe at the G20 summit, right?
Yes, it was really exciting to have the opportunity to go and to work with international unions on the issue of taxing financial transactions and having it go to supporting the fundamentals for all of us, the essential services. As you probably know, in Europe, all the essential services are under attack. They're proposing austerity. Governments are having difficulty. And one way to solve this is to raise revenue, not just make cuts, as Karen was saying.
Right.
And the international leaders from 20 governments were in France. Many of those leaders support the transaction tax.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Yeah, and it was important because Obama was there that the United States be represented to say to Obama that we also in America should support the financial transaction tax.
You're in good company. Well, you're in powerful company, I should say, because Mr. Gates was invited over by Sarkozy to find out what they thought, what he thought could help them, and he told them how about a financial transaction tax as well.
Yeah. He did, and also other groups of people were present, Oxfam, the environmental movement, actors, the rich like Bill Gates were all supporting it. The Angela Merkel of Germany and Sarkozy of France support it. It's quite a global movement at this point, and it's very important that we provide health care to our people. Right. As nurses, that's one our number one issue, but it doesn't do me any good. I take care of kids with cancer. We cure them. We send them home, and if they don't have a home to go to, a healthy environment, good food, it's they're going to become ill again.
Well, you know, now we're talking about, you know, it's always said, and this is part of what the Occupy movement is for, and this is why it arose, obviously, is that, you know, time after time we see polls, 60 to 70% of Americans are against the war. 60 to 70% of Americans are for Medicare for all or single payer. And the people in Congress who work for this, let's call them the 1%, who actually are bribed by them, paid by them, you know, afraid of them or what they can do to their candidacy, they do not, you know, between the president and the Congress, they do not go along with the majority of the American people. They are not a representative government. So it just, that's why I think this Occupy movement is so necessary and why groups like yours are necessary. I mean, it just is so hopeful to me that, and you saw it happen yesterday. I mean, that was wonderful news all across the country, right? The voting that went on, every place. These anti-union laws, bigoted laws against women, everything was being knocked down all over the place.
Which is what, you know, the expectation is that what you're doing, which is wonderful, is you're, you know, getting people to realize that they can make change, that, you know, you can. Sometimes I think it feels, you know, like people feel that I'm only one person and what can I do? And, you know, you vote and it doesn't seem to make a difference. And the reality of this is that this is the people speaking and being out there and pushing to make change. And it is getting people to vote and it is getting people to vote and put out referendums that, you know, will make change, that are actually good for people and not just for the 1%, or not just good for the bank. And the hope is that Washington is getting a real hint that this is not going to stop. This will continue, and it's only going to grow to make the changes that need to happen for the people in this country to survive.
Let me ask you, we're going to get off in a little bit, and we're going to try to get some calls from places like Occupy Albany, Occupy Denver. I've got some people lined up. But I wanted to ask you a question. You know, 99% is a wonderful rallying cry. You know, and the 1%. I think whoever thought that up, I think I read in the paper there was some particular person who came up with that. But we all understand that, you know, we're related. You know, no man is an island, that kind of thing. People are somewhere in the middle, too. I mean, there's a 10%, a 20%. There are people who have money in this country who aren't rich, who worked hard and earned it, who probably are in favor of the Occupy movement. They don't like what's going on with the government and being manipulated either. But I think we need to sort of consider, I guess I'm asking a rhetorical question, but you could tell me what you think. I mean, is it useful just to keep pounding the 1% and the 99%? I mean, it really works well, but there are a whole lot of people in the middle who are looking at all this and saying, you know, I agree with this. I've had enough myself, but I'm not going to join a movement. I still want to vote. I make a couple of hundred thousand a year, but I work like a dog my whole life for it. I have employees who I treat well. You know what I'm talking about?
I would just say that as a nurse, that some of us are partly in the middle, and there's many other working people who support the Occupy movement, just like you say. And I think that this is a social movement that has created space for those people come out and act together with the Occupy movement. Right now, labor is building coalitions at Occupy all over the country. And as you know, we have first aid tents at Occupy Oakland, New York, D.C., et cetera. And we working nurses are out there on the front line coordinating with the occupiers to create a space so that we can create the social change we see as necessary.
Well, you know, I appreciate you both coming on. It's just very heartening. I was watching television last night, MSNBC, saw Ed Schultz out there doing his show live from Ohio and surrounded by union people, which was a wonderful sight to see. I mean, people have been in a trance, like almost like a coma for the last 30 years, right? It's so great to see people waking up. And it was wonderful to see him out there. They gave him an honorary fireman's hat, you know. I mean, it's just... And to see all this, now what I don't want to do is, I guess one last question before we go to a break, is there's the Tea Party out there, right? And I don't think it's a good idea finally in the end to say, they're the other side, we're the other side, they're this way, we're this way. Obviously, it's a different demographic of people. Everybody knows that's clear. But there's got to be bridges between the two sides. After all, they're concentrating on what they're told is the enemy, which is big government and spending. People in the Occupy movement and people like you and I are talking about the manipulation from the rich of the government. How do you see these bridges being built? Because we don't build these bridges. It's just eternal civil war, you know?
I think it's nurses are particularly situated to do this because on our job every day we take care of each other. And one of the hallmarks of a good society is you do build those bridges. We do take care of each other. We do help each other and make sure we all have the essential services that we need. And I think that that is what the Occupy movement is about. And even the rich, as you said, are supporting higher taxation and raising revenue so that we can all have health care, jobs, a decent environment, homes. And we do have to build those bridges. And nurses do that daily, caring for each other and caring for our patients.
Right. I mean, there's no question that we don't ask anybody, you know, what they are, who they are. It is just a matter of caring for people. No one is interested in, you know, where you know, other than a conversation. But it's not going to matter who you are. It is an issue over what is the issue and how do we address it. And we think that is where this whole Occupy Wall Street needs to stay. And I think some groups would like to compartmentalize it to make it look like, you know, oh, it's this group, oh, it's that group, and they have their own agenda. That is not the case. And when you go to these events, it is a amazing to see the people throughout the, you know, the community, the society that are there, mm-hmm. And supporting each other. And they're not asking each other, you know, are you working, are you not working, are you union, are you private, are you public? It's just that they see this is a problem in this country. We need to fix it, and we need to make some changes. And we really feel strongly that the financial tax is just at least one step in that direction. And you know what my feeling is that, you know, if Obama and Washington, you know, need to take this seriously and see this as the first step. And if they're not going to get on, you know, the same page as everyone else, I think this is an indication that is even more concerning that, yes, they are backing, you know, the banks mm-hmm. And Wall Street and somehow have forgotten who put them in Washington. And
They need to be reminded.
They have to be reminded.
Yeah.
And, you know, the way to do that is, again, you know, you vote. You know, you have the polling and you watch and see what people are supporting, and then you hold them to it. And if they're not supporting and you know, getting this country back on its feet by doing the right thing and getting jobs back in this country and taking care of the people with good health care that everyone can afford, not just a few, then, again, you know, they need to be removed. And that is what people need to know, that they have the power to do that, and they need to use that power.
All right. We're going to take a break, and then we're going to talk to some people from various Occupy movements across the country. Karen Higgins and Martha Kuhl. And they are both part of National Nurses United. And once again, that's what, nationalnursesunited.org? NNU.org?
If you're looking it up, you would have to actually spell it right out, nationalnursesunited.org.
Okay, so that's where people should go to check on what they're doing. And please do. Listen, thanks a lot for everything.
You're more than welcome.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, this is Mike Fader. This is a brand new show. It's called Occupied Territory, and it's devoted entirely to the Occupy movement. In whatever form it takes, I will attempt to match that form as we follow it along. We're going to take a break now, and then we're going to talk to somebody who is calling up from Occupy Albany. Okay, Mike Fader back again, and we are in occupied territory here. Colin Donnarumma is here, and he's part of Occupy Albany. Hiya.
Pleasure to be with you.
So I've been reading about Occupy Albany, and in case people out of state of New York don't know, what we have is a big issue here in New York State. Is the Governor Governor Cuomo, is supposed to be a Democrat, maybe even he was supposed to be a liberal, but he's actually kind of a centrist. And his father is actually starting a bank, but we don't know what kind of bank it is. Meanwhile, there has been for a while in this state, because the state needed the money, because it was, you know, treading a thin line and in great debt, what was called a millionaire's tax, which is to say just a tiny little surcharge on rich people's income tax in this country. I don't have the exact details. Maybe Colin does. But this millionaire's tax is due to disappear soon. You know, it was a sundown whatever it is law, and he will not. Cuomo has refused, even though the state is going broke. He would rather lay off workers, eliminate essential services to people who really need them, and basically screw everybody, the middle class, the poor, and everybody else in this state, because he's got to balance his budget. But one thing he won't do, almost like a religious principle, which people don't seem to understand, is continue this minuscule tax on rich people, which raises a lot of money in New York State, because there's a lot of rich people in New York State. This is, after all, where Wall Street is. So I think one thing that Occupy Albany is doing is dealing with that, or trying to protest that, or making it clear to people. And maybe you can fill me in on what the group has been doing and what they will be doing.
Yeah, absolutely. My pleasure. So you're right. On December 31st, the surcharge on millionaires and billionaires in New York is set to expire. And if it's not renewed, it will represent a $5 billion tax cut to the wealthiest New Yorkers at a time of fiscal austerity. We just went through a budget cycle last year where the governor and the state legislature cut more than $1 billion in K-12 education, cut more than $200 million from higher education / social services, laid off state workers. And in that climate, we think it's highly inappropriate to give a $5 billion tax cut to the wealthiest New Yorkers. So, yes, we're at our third week of occupying Academy Park, which is right across the street from the New York State Capitol. There we're voicing the message that we are the 99%, and we're demanding that Governor Cuomo and the New York State Senate do what's right, act in the interest of the 99% rather than the 1%, and extend this small surcharge and reinvest it into education and social services.
Now, we'll see what happens, and we can only hope that it happens. I mean, I am completely mystified that this man, who was brought up, I thought, somewhat morally by a governor who was somewhat decent, his father, I am just absolutely mystified, although you can always fill in the blanks when you don't understand something by thinking about what a campaign costs and where his money comes from and who his friends are. But he is still the governor of the people of the state of New York, not of a handful of the people of the state of New York. So we'll see what happens. What impressed me also up in Albany was that in a lot of places, you know, you see what happens in Oakland and Chicago and down on Wall Street, that you're camped out there, and the state or the local police, whoever is responsible for dealing with you, have not evicted you, have not attacked you. And remarkably enough, and it stands out when you look across the country, is that the Albany district attorney up there has been very unusual in his behavior. Maybe you could talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. The district attorney actually came to our encampment the first morning after we stayed over in the park. He had breakfast with us, and he publicly pledged not to prosecute anyone who was arrested for nonviolent civil disobedience and remaining in the park. We had a really interesting dynamic where there's a large park right across the street from the New York State Capitol. The upper part of the park is controlled by state authorities, and the lower park is controlled by city officials. Governor Cuomo pledged to arrest anyone who remained in the state portion of the park after 11 o'clock curfew. So we set up our encampment in the city portion, and we had a really good response from city officials. As I said, the district attorney came out and publicly supported us. Our city chief of police said that we had a right to be there and that he would not use police forces to come in. He didn't think that was a productive use of Albany's police department. The mayor of Albany was under enormous pressure from the Cuomo administration, but ended up saying, no, I'm not going to go in. They have a First Amendment right to freedom of association. They have a right to be here and protest. It would be counterproductive to come in and try to arrest peaceful protesters. So we've actually had a really good rapport with the city officials. We had a meeting with several representatives from our occupation with city officials last week, and we're scheduled to meet with them again later this afternoon. And we've kind of been continuing an ongoing dialogue that so far has been respectful. We're being insistent in our rights to be there, but we're also appreciate the goodwill we've seen from the city, and I think we've established a really good relationship that I wish a lot of other cities across the country would model.
You know, it's I've been up in Albany once. It's cold up in Albany when it gets to be like this, right? Especially the winter's coming. So how do you? This is the question for a lot of places, but how do you all intend to deal with this?
Yeah, that's a really good question, and that's definitely on the front burner right now. We have a group who's working on winterizing our camp. Right now we have about 50 to 60 tents set up in the park. The majority of those are not winterized tents. So what we're doing now is we've gotten amazing support from the community. We've gotten thousands of dollars in donations. We've gotten lots of donations of warm sleeping bags, blankets. And so what we're doing is we're trying to pool some of those funds that we've received and look into some more winterized long-term structure, some heavier army tents, some portable heaters that can be safely run in a larger tent. So we're looking to get better equipment to winterize, to get structures in the park that will be allowed to keep there, but that will also allow us to maintain ourselves safely in the park. And we have some experts who we're working with who are telling us that this is something that really can be done. It's going to be doable.
Mm-hmm.
And our intent is to stay in the park indefinitely and to have a presence there throughout the whole winter. So right now we're actively looking into ways in which we can do that.
Well, we're going to move on and talk to somebody from Occupy Denver and Colin Donnarumma. And I appreciate you coming on. And obviously, I appreciate what you're doing. I mean, I'm down here in the radio studio, a nice warm radio studio. But I'm glad you're out there doing that. So maybe you can tell people where they can go to find out more information and also how to help.
Yeah, absolutely. You can go to OccupyAlbany.org, and you can also go to Occupy Albany on Facebook. And there we have links to lists of donations that we're seeking. There you can keep up with the latest news, see what actions we're working on for the coming weeks, and stay connected. So those are kind of the best ways to do it. We have a really good active web and tech committee, so we're trying to keep as many people plugged into what we're doing as possible.
All right. Thank you very much for coming on.
My pleasure. Thank you very much.
Okay. We'll talk to you again probably in the next couple of weeks and check in and see how it's going.
Great. That sounds good.
Okay, this is Mike Fader, and you're listening to a new show on PRN called Occupied Territory, and we intend to stay here. None of the police aren't here trying to throw me out, so I've got an easy job of it. But we intend to stay here as long as the Occupy movement does, and as it changes or focuses or gets larger or organizes, we will follow that too. Right now, also, we have somebody joining us from Occupy Denver. That's Jeannie Hartley. Hi, Jeannie.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
Okay.
What a remarkable contrast to be listening to Colin describing what is happening in Albany in relationship to what is happening here in Denver. Our governor, Hickenlooper, and Mayor Hancock and our city council would do very well to listen to everything that Colin just said. I certainly wish that they would, because our situation is quite different.
Yeah, you've had a lot of trouble with the authorities, with the police.
It's from a continuum standpoint. We're at the other end of the continuum of what Colin just described. You know, after the police violence that we had weekend before last, and what he described there about the difference between the city and the state, our governor did the same that the governor there did, which was said, no, you can't camp here. So then when we moved to the city side, things did not change. The mayor said, no, you can't camp here. Our city council, in contrast to what is being described by Colin in Albany, has a pending proposal or law that they are talking about trying to put through in January that will ban our homeless from sleeping at the 16th Street Mall, that I believe it will ban them from sleeping on the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
We do have a couple of city council members that have reached out to us. One of them is Susan Shepherd. I have not spoken with her personally, but also Robin Kanish, who I spoke to on Thursday. She came up to me at our event right before Michael Moore arrived here, and she said that she did want to work with us and that she wanted us to give them a list of our new issues and concerns, which we are in the process of compiling and soon to be presenting to the city council.
Any state legislators had the guts to come down here or to stand up for you?
No, to stand up for us, no, not yet. Yeah. That has not happened.
Is this a very, very conservative state, Colorado?
Yeah, well, it's appearing to be a lot more conservative than I ever dreamed by what's happening in relationship to this, because we have the cold weather coming as well. You know, we have cold weather here now. We have people sleeping outside freezing and below freezing temperatures.
You had snow pretty early a couple of weeks ago, right?
Yes, we did. Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, we had an incident where there was a gentleman, a veteran, who dug himself an igloo. You know, it was 18 degrees out. And the police came and took him out of the igloo and arrested him and tore the igloo down because it was considered to be something, I guess, in the fashion of a tent. So
it's amazing,
you know,
when
we don't have.
Yeah, it's amazing when you look across the country.
Incredible.
When you see what happened in Denver, and you've described this to me before too, and what happened in Chicago, what happened in Oakland, and what's happening down on Wall Street. I mean, there are tens of thousands of police, a lot of them in riot gear. They look like something from some, you know, modern video game or something, and treating everybody who's doing this, basically who is just sitting in a park or sleeping in a park without a permit, treating you all like you are terrorists or about to blow up the state capitol or something. And all the money, they must have spent $100 million already in the last 2 months just trying to watch you, suppress you, surveil you, you know what I mean, to make trouble for you. It's such an astounding, what the police should be doing, it seems to me, is protecting you, facing outwards, and looking for the real criminals, right? I mean, not to sound too naive, but, you know.
Yes, no, to protect and serve. We, you know, we have a right to assembly. We have a right to freedom of speech. They should be defending these things. On Saturday, October 29th, the afternoon when the police force was out in extreme amounts, it was said that that $500,000 was spent on that day. We had literally hundreds of those police in riot gear. We had between 200 and 300 police officers in riot gear. Several hundred of them, or at least 100 to 200 of them, were surrounding just our food table.
Well, they're obviously
wanted to take that down.
Well, clearly, now, you know, we don't have that much time left, but clearly, they are not looking. You know, they're not surrounding you with such force, you know, and with such threatening demeanor, because you're dangerous or because you're a threat to anybody. They're surrounding you and treating you like this because you represent or symbolize what may be, and what I hope is, a massive change in the way society works. And since, whether they like it or not, and some of them may not like it, but they have, you know, jobs and they have to keep them to pay their own mortgages and to feed their own kids, they're going to do what they're told to do. It's a military organization. And they're obviously there in such force and with such threatening demeanor and behavior to make a point. And this is where the Occupy movement at its deepest level is meeting the other side at its deepest level.
Yes, and something too, and I don't remember the exact name of the article. I can probably get that source for you later. But I read an article that came out of the UK a few days ago that was discussing what happened in Nashville when they took down the camp in Nashville. And what I read in that article was that this order did not even come from the city or the state level, that it in fact came from the Department of Homeland Security, which speaks exactly to what you just said. That they are looking upon this as a huge threat.
The Department of Homeland Security?
Yes.
Well,
I will send that to you later. I've got to look up the source, but
yeah, send it to me, and I'll bring it into one of the shows and read it. You know, clearly, what's happening here is, and this is what I started off saying. What the show is all about is one of the fears I have is that. That we are, it's not a fear, it's a reality, and it's clear that we are slipping straight down a slippery, slippery slope right into a corporate police state. And it's not knee-jerk, left-wing, you know, verbiage. It's true. Billions of dollars are being spent to watch us, to suppress us, to arrest us, to keep us from practicing our basic American freedoms, you know. And yeah, I feel like if this Occupy movement doesn't work, that's about it. You know, I don't see anything else standing in their way.
I agree with you. And one of the things that I find so disturbing, that I'm sure you do too, and many other people across the country do, is that in relationship to the excessive force, this seems to be a carte blanche for some police officers just to do whatever they want. I actually have started a petition asking for a national moratorium on the use of pepper spray, for the police to be able to use it. I did a lot of research on that after I saw what happened with the pepper spray at our event on Saturday 29th, and I was appalled at the dangers, at the risks, at the documentation of abuses. It is just, it's astounding. It's not even classified necessarily as a non-lethal weapon. It's classified as a less lethal weapon. In the state of North Carolina, a medical board ruled that it was too unsafe for them to even have police officers practice with it during training. There's documentation of people dying from respiratory failure and heart failure just from inhaling pepper spray.
Well, you know, we are just about out of time because I think I sort of overbooked this show. So next time around, we'll have more time to talk. But I just want to include as many people as possible. So we'll stay in touch. One thing I want to get from you, and which I'm asking everybody who comes on, is how people can, anybody who's near Denver or in Denver, how can they help Occupy Denver?
There is a link at the OccupyDenver.org website that they can click on. And they can also, you can also click on outreach. There's some links there, outreach, PDM, media PR. If you click on the media PR link, that email comes right to me, right to our PR team and me as well.
Okay.
And anything you want to do, let me know, and I will respond to you as quickly as I can.
Okay. Jeannie Hartley from Occupy Denver, and obviously we will be hearing from you again in the next few weeks sometime.
Thank you so much, Mike, for what you're doing. This is so important to have this voice here through you. We really appreciate what you're doing.
Well, same from this end for you. We have a call here. Rich, who is from Richmond. Is that Richmond, Virginia?
Yep.
And tell us what you've got there.
Well, I know you're into books, mm-hmm. and I'm reading a book now. I don't know if you've ever heard of this one by Callie Lassen, the founder of Adbusters magazine, Culture Jam.
Culture Jam.
Yep, The Uncooling of America. But and I think Adbusters, weren't they the people that kind of sparked off the whole Occupy Wall Street?
Yeah, I think they suggested that people do it and kind of spread it around,
mm-hmm.
right?
But reading the book, it's just really amazing how prescient, even though the book is from 1999, what he's writing in here is what's happening right now with mm-hmm. Occupy Wall Street. And I'm beginning to wonder if this isn't something that really is going to turn into a revolution.
Well, maybe it will, and maybe it has to. I mean, God forbid violence like that, but, I mean, we can't allow things to go on the way they have. Give the title once more, and then I've got to move on.
It's a great book for some background on Occupy Wall Street, kind of how yeah. it evolved.
And the title is?
It's Callie Lassen's the author, founder of Adbusters magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And the name of the book is Culture Jam, The Uncooling of America.
All right. Thanks, Rich.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. We are approaching the end of our first show. I appreciate your listening. Get in touch with me at FederFiles, FederFiles.com. Anybody from an Occupy movement, I want to hear from you. We'll book you on the show. Any reports you have to give me, anything you want to recommend, any articles. Also, you can tweet us here at PRN_radio with questions and comments, and our call-in number, which you should write down, just etch it on your forehead, so every time you look in the mirror, it's 888-874-4888, and I'd like to get more and more calls as the weeks go on. For ways to check on what's going on, I recommend the following, a place called OccupyTogether.org, and also alternate.org is a wonderful source for information. And you might try freepress.org, but alternate.org and occupytogether.org. Radio, I do a show also on Sirius XM. It's Sirius XM 127 is the channel. And it's mostly about politics, culture, society, and there's a lot about the Occupy movement. And that's on Saturday nights from 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern, locally here in New York, or you can check them out online. It's WBAI-FM at 99.5 in the tri-state area here in New York, Connecticut, New Jersey, or you can go to BAI.org. And every weekday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern, they have a report on what's going on Occupy Wall Street. So stay in touch, stay tuned in, and let's all do this together.